You are listening to an American Free Press podcast. Joining me on the line is Mark Farner, the founding member of the legendary rock group Grand Funk Railroad. Mark, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, good to be here with you, Dave.
Is it okay if I call you Mark, or would you prefer
me? Yeah,
okay.
Please.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah,
now,
man.
I just want to say a few things to the listeners, because I usually don't interview people such as yourself. Now, I've interviewed some big names like Hillary Clinton and some average people. And I prefer the average people more than the politicians, of course. But
yeah.
I was talking to a mutual acquaintance of both of ours, Paul Tepeti, yesterday. And I said, Paul, you know, I've interviewed some pretty big names, you know, over the years. And I have to say that this is probably the biggest person I've ever interviewed. And he goes, you know, Mark's just like me and you. I said, no, I'm sure he is. But because of the fact that now I was born in 1960 and grew up in New Jersey and lived with your music, as a matter of fact, just a few weeks ago. And I remembered this somehow. I was in fast food line. I can't remember if it was Arby's or McDonald's, but I was singing one of your band songs, American Band. And I don't know why. I was just singing it. It came out of my head. And because of that, for me anyway, speaking to you is a real honor. And I know, I'm sure that you've heard this from a lot of people over the decades, and a lot of people who know about music and who are musicians, which I am not. You know, I couldn't play anything, and I certainly couldn't sing my way out of a paper bag. But I just want to say that for me, and it sounds a little cliche, but it absolutely is an honor speaking to you today, sir.
Brother, I appreciate the kind words, and I appreciate the sensitivity of your heart, especially. In these days, it's rare.
And I appreciate you coming on today to discuss
right
a couple of
thank
things.
You.
Thank
pleasure
you.
Pleasure to be here as well.
Thank you. For the benefit of listeners, I did a little research on Grand Funk Railroad, found out the etymology of the band and the actual railroad that it's named after. Now, you're from Michigan. You were born and raised?
Flint, Michigan.
Okay, Flint. Okay, so I'm sure you probably are sad to see what has happened to that city.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Do you have any contact with any of the prominent people from Flint or that have paid attention to Flint, like that filmmaker Michael Moore?
No, not really. You know, I played down at, they do Back to the Bricks. It's like a car rally where they bring out all the muscle cars. And it's actually, it starts in Detroit and all the way up through Pontiac and Flint. People got their muscle cars out, and it's like a real, it's a festival because this is where, you know, all these cars came from. And I played that at Atwood Stadium in Flint, and the mayor gave me the key to the city 3 years ago, but I don't stay in contact with anybody there because most of my family's moved out of there now. And it had been, you know, a pretty industrial town, and now it's like turning into more of a college town.
That's kind of good, I guess, right?
Yeah. Well, there's some places that are started, very nice places, and, you know, and people are coming. So I wish them luck. I don't want to be there, man. I want to be right here watching these birds eat the feed out of the feeder out here in the woods, dude.
That's cool. A little too cold for me, though.
Yeah,
but, actually, it looks like, if this is correct, because I'm looking at Wikipedia and they're rife with inaccuracies many times, but here I'm looking at the last entry in the Grand Funk Railroad on Wikipedia. It says Grand Funk Railroad continues to tour 40 shows a year and will kick off their 45 years of Grand Funk tour January 25th of this year. That's pretty amazing that it's 45 years of the band. Wow.
But the rendition that is out there now is minus the guy that wrote and sang over 90, you know, some percent of the music.
Of course.
And people that have gone to see this rendition and have reported to me, fans, just said they're like a tribute band because
of course
it is my voice that sang those songs. And I don't care how good the guy is, it's not going to be the same chemistry. And I was really bummed back when the Beatles were all still sucking air and they wouldn't get back together. I'm thinking, why wouldn't you just do it for the fans? Why wouldn't you just do that? Put all your differences aside, forget about that, and play to your fans. And this is what I've been trying to get the other two guys to do, but I think, I don't know, I hate to speculate on why they wouldn't, but they're running the trademark into the ground, as far as I'm concerned, because these people that I've talked to and people in the business are peers. It's like a three-ring circus because they're doing 38 special songs and these other songs that one of the singers did. I mean, it's like more like a, you know.
Right, like a cover band in a bar.
Yeah,
right. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, I just want to read something for the listeners so they can get an idea about the significance of Grand Funk Railroad. It's incredible the impact you've had on the world. And again, this is from Wikipedia, but there are some significant things in here. Grand Funk Railroad, also known as Grand Funk, is an American, and of course, as we mentioned, the Grand Funk Railroad, which you headlined, doesn't exist anymore, but it says is, it really it should say was, an American blues rock band that was highly popular during the 1970s. Grand Funk Railroad toured to packed arenas worldwide. This fellow at Rolling Stone said, you cannot talk about rock in the 70s without talking about Grand Funk Railroad. And did you call the band sometimes abbreviated GFR? Is that something acceptable or...
Yeah, that was very acceptable. And actually, the fans did the shortening of, the, you know, Grand Funk Railroad for us, just like they did for Chicago Transit Authority. They just shortened it to Chicago. Oh, we're going to see Chicago, you know. They wouldn't say, we're going to see Chicago Transit Authority or Grand Funk Railroad, the Grand Funk, Chicago. It's kind of the slang, you know, it turns into street. Real quick.
Mm-hmm. And it says here, a popular take on the band during its heyday was that although the critics hated them, which obviously means nothing, audiences loved them. And we talked about the origins of Grand Funk after Grand Trunk Western Railroad. And of course, Mark, please, if any of these things that I'm saying are incorrect, please correct me.
Right on.
And the band was formed in 1969 by you and a couple other fellas. And here it says, first achieving recognition at the 1969 Atlanta Pop Festival, the band was signed by Capitol Records, and after a raucous, well-received set on the first day of the festival, the group was asked back to play two additional days, patterned after hard rock power trios such as Cream, all this stuff that I just said. Would you agree with that?
Oh, yes.
Okay, good. What's significant about it here is that I guess no one, the critics and very few people in the hierarchy of the music industry, felt that you guys were ever going to break through. But the fans obviously loved you, and you had some albums that went multi-platinum and gold. What does it mean when an album goes gold or platinum or multi-platinum?
Gold is $1 million worth of sales, which back then would have constituted maybe 350,000 sales, $1 million, right, in wholesale. So platinum would be 1 million units. Instead of $1 million, it switches to the 1 million units, which represents, you know, buku.
Wow. What did it feel like, really, because it seemed like you were catapulted in a short time to the status of rock and roll gods. What did it feel like?
It felt wonderful. It was like answer to prayer. And so overwhelming for, because the band, I mean, we were 20-year-old kids. My mother had to sign the contract because in the state of Michigan, you got to be 21, legal. So it was very overwhelming for young boys. You know, garage band. We were just a garage band. We got polished on that first gig. It was like, okay, this is what you do. And we rocked. I mean, I was dancing and everything. I mean, I'm an entertainer. This is what I feel like is missing in entertainment. People just stand in front of a microphone and singing. They're not doing it. I'm trying to act out the part. You know, I'm singing it, but I'm playing it too. I'm playing the role. And I think that that's really what people recognize with Grand Funk Railroad, the original Grand Funk, was the live shows and what we were talking about, what I was writing, because I wrote 100% of the music until American Band. I wrote everything. Wow. You know, I wrote the song People, Let's Stop the War. I mean, when we do that song today on stage, Dave, it brings a house down because the song still means something. You know,
yeah, of course.
People, let's stop the war. There's still a war to stop. And it was that mentality in our peers, our age group, that gathered and we rallied because we wanted to say, hey, let's stop this BS. You know, we can see what it is, you idiots. Let's stop.
And it's still going on. Still going
on.
Right?
Yeah.
Amazing. I don't know what my favorite song is, but I know that one of my favorites is I'm Your Captain. I guess that's most closely associated, for me anyway, with you guys. You know how, like, even today, you'll hear some of these classic songs and you'll be singing along with them and you get the wrong words or you really don't know what it means. What is that all about, I'm Your Captain?
This was the first song I'd ever written lyrics first.
Wow.
Every other song prior to this song came from a jam. You know, some chords that were coming together in my head. And I was privileged enough to stay in touch with that part of my consciousness to where I could dip in and grab some songs, you know, and stay in that state of mind to write albums. We were doing 2 albums a year back then. But I believe the whole texture of our time, the people made it what it was. It's a song that I prayed, you know, I always said, now I lay me down to sleep, I pray the Lord my soul to keep. You know, the prayer that my mother showed us 6 kids. And I put a P.S. on my prayer. I pray. I pray all day. I pray all. I'm constantly in a state of prayer now because our country needs it. My family needs it. We all need it. And somebody has to stay in touch with reality while all this mesmerization is happening and turning our kids into vidiots, you know. Somebody has to stay in touch with love. And I think because of that song, I got up in the middle of the night and I wrote these words, Dave. I didn't know it because I'm always writing words. I write poems. My wife goes around, picks up the napkins and the little pieces of paper. She got
right.
A file with all this stuff. But I got up in the morning, had my coffee. I'm sitting there. I'm looking out. The horses are out in the pasture and I'm going, I'm out in the country and the sun's up and it was like a fresh morning. And I thought, oh, I wonder if those words are actually a song, if I could make it. So I went and got my little legal pad, brought it to the kitchen, sat down, and wrote I'm Your Captain. I mean, it was already written. I just had to put the music to it. But it was written all like a story or something. Just all the words. There was no verses and chorus and anything. It was just all written down. Like I spoke it out, like I said the song, eh? Mm-hmm. And took it to rehearsal, and the guys went, man, that song's a hit. I guess they were right. And really, the Vietnam veterans in 2005, it was the 25th anniversary of the wall in Washington, D.C., and they wanted me to come and sing that song. And I asked them if they were going to have a stage and if there was lights and stuff. And, yeah, they're going to have a stage, and it's going to be a pretty good. I said, well, I'll bring the whole band, and we'll play you a set. How would that be? Well, they went crazy, and we went and played. But I'm going to tell you something. That song, it's spiritual. It really is, because I asked God for that song. And I said, I asked specifically for a song that would reach and touch the hearts of people that God was trying to get to. And
it did.
Yeah. And I don't define what it is, Dave. I don't try to interpret what that is, because it means so many things to so many different people. Just like the bridge over troubled water. You know, they ask 100 different people what that song meant. They got 100 different interpretations. I think that's beautiful.
Yeah.
And I'm glad there wasn't a video to it, because it would have been just one thing then. But it's so beautiful that in the imagination of our own personal experience, it can be what it is, and it can be as big as what it is, and it can touch our spirit.
Well, it's such a beautiful song. Thank you for putting that together. Oh, wow.
Yeah, man.
I mean,
pleasure. Trust me.
It brings pleasure to people. Mm-hmm. You don't even know. Millions of people, dead and living, and yet to be
that
born.
Ain't good.
Yeah,
oh, man.
God, I mean, this is, it's amazing. Now, you know, you said something, you used a word that I don't know if too many people are familiar with. Even nowadays, you use the word vidiot. And I've used that word plenty of times over the decades. And of course, that originally, I think that was coined back in the 80s when we were playing like Asteroids and,
mm-hmm.
and all those games, Nintendo, when it was, you know, such a pure little, you know, toy. Now, of course,
mm-hmm.
you got all this violence. And it seems like nowadays, vidiot isn't used that much. It should be. But these games, these companies are really creating these now violent vidiots. Would you say that's a huge problem?
It's huge. People don't understand the influence. They're so naive, Dave. The concept, it just passes them over. It bowls them over. It blows them over. They're so damn naive. The people got to wake up to the reality of it. This is a sickness. And I believe that it stems from the very top of our society, where there should be some righteousness standing up there. And then trickle down from righteousness would be very cool on this planet. But we got insanity standing up there. And trickle down is what we see all around us. It's not good. There are some very sick people at the top of this. And their reign has to stop. I call them the Banksters of Oz because they have an electronic curtain, a very expensive electronic curtain, but they're hiding. People don't know their names, but they run this show. They not only fund the United States and issue the currency that we have, become indebted to them over, but they issue the currency to Mexico, Canada, South Africa, Australia, New Zealand, India, you name wherever the British have gone and settled. And this is where the top structure, the banksters, but they stay hidden and they manipulate the world through the ownership of the video, all of mainstream. In 1995, when it was deregulated, Mr. Money bought everything. And it's very sterile. I mean, the terrestrial radio is very sterile. Everything is just, like, very sick because of the ownership, the trickle-down. I'm telling you, when you got some nut at the top, things are going to be nutty at the bottom. I don't care what rung of the ladder you stop on. It's not going to be good.
No.
So we got to hang on to the goodness and make the reality ourselves. And it's like a counter-reality. What they're trying to tell us is real.
Yeah,
bringing
no,
down the Twin Towers. I mean, people really believe that that happened.
You're absolutely right about what you're saying. I've often felt, and I still do, that I'm traveling in some kind of a parallel universe, that what I know and, you know, what you know, what other people
yeah.
know, isn't really what the majority knows. And then trying to explain this stuff to them is virtually impossible.
Exactly. Yeah, if you start talking to somebody and they look right past you, and it's like, oh, there they go. I lost them.
I have to go.
Yep.
I have to go now. Are you a subscriber to American Free Press, Mark?
Yes, I am.
Oh, how long have you been a subscriber?
Oh, 15 years.
Wow. Well, so when it was the Spotlight before that as well?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I followed that whole thing.
American Free Press is really, the tagline is America's last real newspaper, and that's very true in many ways.
Oh, it is.
Media.
Direct, controlled, and contrived.
Yeah, absolutely. And packaged up to sell more widgets or whatever it is that they're selling.
War.
Yeah, war. Sadly, I can't figure that
bro.
One out. I cannot figure that out for the life of me. I wanted to ask you, I know that, you know, you have another appointment after this, and I don't want to go too far into it, although, like I said, I would love to speak to you for a lot longer. Perhaps we can do that in the future. But
absolutely.
How was it that you and Paul Tepeti crossed paths?
Well, Paul came out to a gig that I was playing in Upper Peninsula of Michigan. A friend of ours, Mark Hall, who was promoting the show up in the upper, had a bike run and a whole bunch of plant people at bands come in from Boston, and Paul's band came in from Pennsylvania. And it was bands that Mark Hall knew and, you know, good musicians that really had something to say. It wasn't just fluff going out. And there was actually going to be some constructive positive things said and music played and all get our head in the right direction. I met Paul up there at that gig, and we've been in touch ever since, just because, you know, his spirit, he so wants freedom, the same as me, cries for this country and for our young people, what they've been handed, and, you know, we want to help them figure it out and save this place, man. We think there's still a possibility to save it, to pull it out, as long as we all do it together. We can become the people's army of planet Earth. And every living nation and every kindred tongue speak this word of peace and speak this word of love and live this, and we can overcome the insanity that has become the norm around here.
Again, absolutely. You guys collaborated on something. What was that?
Oh, dude, Paul came and, you know, we're jamming in the basement, and he's keyboards and guitar, and the same as me. I mean, we're kind of multi-instruments, so you never know when we're together what we'll be playing, but we'll be playing. We will be playing, for sure. And he started this jam, and I went, oh, man, I hear this. I hear that, but I hear it a different way. I hear it kind of like a dance, you know, with verses and chorus and really constructive. He says, well, do it, man. He says, if you hear it, he says, by all means, please do it. Because it was kind of a protest song that he was thinking. But I heard it as, like, I'm going to take you out. I'm looking at this girl who's dancing across the dance floor, and I'm fantasizing, like, man, I'm going to come over there, and I'm going to show you that I can dance, and you're really going to like me because I can dance, and I want to do this, but I'm fantasizing this stuff, you know? And I saw the whole song as he was jamming this riff, and then I wrote it, of course, and then sent it to Paul. He was like, he loved it. It was great. It was nothing like the original, you know, but it was the groove that Paul had because he was on guitar. You know, his main instrument is the keyboard, but he does guitar very well because he plays it like a keyboard. So it's different, you know.
Right.
Take You Out came
yes.
from that jam and getting together, and it's a good, fun song, and I think it really touches on something that men are not populating the dance floor enough. They don't have the confidence to step out there, and they think they're going to look like a fool or something, but women would love to see him come out and look like a fool. In fact, they'd go home with that fool, you know? But, man, you know, it seems like in most of the guys that I know that are playing out, they tell me the same thing. Yeah, the women that are on the dance floor, it's 90% women dancing with each other. And there might be, you know, five guys out there or something. But those five guys are the successful guys that are, you know, happy, and the girls are liking them. But you know what? This song is calling. And when you hear this song, you might just find your foot tapping. You might want to get up and shake it a little bit.
Wow. I've done that for years. So is that, is that song out?
It is out now, yes. We just released it as a single, and there is a video available at markfriner.com. It's my first ever music video. It's a couple of live performances and some shot here in northern Michigan, in the beautiful woods of northern Michigan. But the one video, one of the performances, was at Vet Rock out there in Jersey. And the wind was blowing so hard that the fire marshal shut down the show because the light truss in the front was swinging 6 feet from side to side.
Wow.
Yeah.
Where was that in Jersey?
Atlantic City.
Okay. Yeah, by the ocean there.
Yep.
That can happen.
Oh, boy.
Wow. So folks can go to markfriner.com.
Yeah.
Any other websites that...
iTunes, CD Baby, it's available
yeah.
to take you out.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a video trailer on YouTube that they can check out, the trailer to this video.
Okay, great. I know you got to leave in 5 minutes, so I'm sorry about that. I said 20 minutes, but I was wrong. I could never predict, and I hope I didn't hold you up here.
Not a problem whatsoever, brother.
All right,
it's been a pleasure talking to you, and anytime you just give a holler, I'll be here. I'm ready to talk, man.
Like I said, it was an honor for me. Mark Farner, the founding member of, the founder, really, of Grand Funk Railroad, an amazing band, some amazing history, an amazing man. Mark, thanks so much for the time you spent explaining all this to the listeners today, and looking forward to talking to you again in the future.
All right, Dave, my pleasure. God bless you, and knock them alive over there in New Jersey.